Well, it's a real pleasure to be here with you today. It always brings back memories when I come back to this campus and think about the actual 5 years I spent in Loma Linda. Wasn't in dental school quite that long, but back then dental school was a 3-year course. Would you all like to do it in 3 years? Be nice to get it over with in 3 years, wouldn't it? But it was a real blessing. Actually, I think about 80% of our class needed 42 months, and a few needed 48 months or longer. But I was one that took 42 months to finish. So it was December of 1976 that I finished dental school. One of the memories as we sang here tonight I was thinking of was one of the ways our class devised to relieve stress. So anyone here experience stress in mock boards or, you know, lab projects where you have a given amount of time to do something? Well, when the stress level seemed to be just about the highest, someone in our class would break out in singing a hymn. And before long, everyone, the whole class, it seemed like, was singing that hymn. And it just, you know, it just added an air about the atmosphere that relaxed everybody. And we became known as the singing class, I guess. We had a little song we sang. Robert James was one of our favorite instructors. And we had a song we would sing whenever he came into the room. And I won't try to sing it for you, but anyway, we had a lot of fun, and I think some of the instructors were kind of glad when we graduated. But we also had a men's chorus out of our class, and I remember we sang at the University Church a time or two. But anyway, a lot of good memories. This evening, I want to take you to 1 Corinthians, the 3rd chapter. And as I read this chapter recently, I happened to think how many applications it has to me in my life. And so I'm going to kind of weave my personal experience into some of the things that I see in this chapter of 1 Corinthians 3, beginning with verse 3. Apparently, there were some problems in Corinth. We know there were some problems in Corinth, and Paul is describing some of them here. He says, "For ye are yet carnal, for whereas there is among you envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal and walk as men?" So here we find the Corinthians. He's describing them as experiencing envying and strife, divisions, reminding them that they are carnal and they are walking as men. What does it mean to walk as men? That's kind of... To me, it means walking the way sin has left us, walking in our carnal minds. But you know, if we remember what Jesus said in John, the 1st chapter, verse 12, he said, "And as many as received him, to them gave them power to what? Become the children of God." So if we have received Jesus, we have power to become actually a child of God. And if we are a child of God, we're not walking as men, are we? We're walking as a child of God. And so this was, I think, one of the solutions to the problem of the Corinthians as well, in if they had been surrendered. Then he goes on in verse 4, "For while one saith, I am of Paul, and another, I am of Apollos, are ye not carnal? Who then is Paul, and who is Apollos, but ministers by whom ye believed, even as the Lord gave to every man? I have planted," Paul speaking about himself, "I have planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase." You know, there's different personalities, and sometimes we in the church... may think that one pastor is effective and another one's not effective because they may have a different approach, or they may have different skill sets, or they may approach things in different ways. And Paul is trying to point out that even though he played one role in planting, and apparently Paul Obviously, Paul was a church planter, wasn't he? Wherever he traveled in the world, he left a Christian church behind. And Apollos was also no doubt an effective worker, and he described him as someone who watered. But apparently some of the church believers felt that Paul was better or Apollos was better, and so it was dividing the church. And then Paul says in verse 6, but God gave the increase. So then neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but God gave the increase. And as I've thought about this, I guess there's similar differences in personalities and professional people as well. And when I left dental school, the church leaders in the poor conference that I went to, a small conference, and there was, I think, maybe one other Adventist dentist in the conference at that time, and just a few physicians, they wanted me to go to a church that was established, that was maybe struggling. Actually, they wanted me to go to one of the big cities where I could make more money. And but I felt called to go to a dark county where there had not been an Adventist witness before. And they tried to persuade me to go to a small church that was struggling when they found I wasn't going to go to a bigger city. And I said, no, I want to go to an area where there's nothing been done before. And you know, just the fact that I was willing, my wife and I were willing to strike out into an unknown like this doesn't make me any better than those who don't. And I think it's similar to what Paul was dealing with here. Whatever God calls us to, that's what we should be doing. And I've often wondered if there's not a genetic component to planters. As I look at my background, I have a great uncle, had a great uncle who pioneered Adventist work down in South America. Perhaps some of you, when you were children, read the book, These Fords Still Run. Lillian Orley Ford was a great uncle of mine. And I had another uncle who started churches. He started one of the main churches in Lincoln, Nebraska, Piedmont Park Church, and he actually started the church down in Escondido, California. And some of your parents will probably remember Perry Green, Pastor Perry Green. And my brother has started several churches and schools as well. So maybe there's a genetic component to it. No, I don't know. But nevertheless, let me just give you a brief background of myself. I was actually born the third of five children, and it was before we knew about the middle child syndrome, so I didn't have any excuses. But my father disappeared from the family when I was 4 years old. And the youngest in our family was, I think, 6 months. So we grew up basically without a father. Thankfully, my mother was able to keep us in church school. And I'm a product of the Adventist school system through Loma Linda University. And I'm very, very thankful for that. But by the age of 10, we were living in Lincoln, Nebraska. I was developing quite a criminal record and getting in trouble with the police and a number of things we don't need to go into. But my mother wisely moved to Arkansas, rural Arkansas. And so I finished elementary school and academy there at Ozark Academy. And but at the age of 12, I surrendered my life to Jesus. And that has made all the difference in the world since then. And although I would not say I'm a perfect example, but I can look back and see how the Lord has blessed and led in my life since that time. And I also, thinking about career choices, when I was young, I read a lot of books about missionary doctors, and I really wanted to be a missionary doctor. And however, when I was in academy, I was somewhat of a model child, and everyone said, oh, you need to be a preacher. You need to be a preacher. So I just didn't think too much about it and decided I would go on to college and be a preacher until after 3 years of college, and I was looking at a commitment to go to Andrews University and become a preacher, that I thought, whatever happened to my interest in being a missionary doctor? And so the summer after my third year of college, I decided I wanted to go into medicine. And so I changed my direction completely and began taking science class, more science classes than I had. And my wife, we were married after our third year of college, and she finished a year ahead of me. And then we moved from Southwestern Adventist College to Union College, where she was accepted into a master's degree program and dietetic internship at the University of Nebraska. And so I finished my college degree there at Union College. And then we moved to Loma Linda, where she was hired actually before she graduated and worked in the medical center as an administrative dietitian here. But the year I applied to medical school, there were 1,500 applications. That may be similar today, I don't know. But I did not have a good enough GPA. But about this time, we ran into some friends my wife knew years ago. He was teaching in the dental school, and he encouraged me to study dentistry instead. And during the time I was taking some classes here, our first year here, starting a degree in public health, I was also working in the medical center as a nursing assistant, and got a little clearer picture of the lives of residents and physicians, and decided that I wanted to be home when my kids were growing up, and so I changed career plans, and the Lord opened the door for me to start dentistry. So then, interestingly enough, when we was finishing dentistry, we wanted to go into mission service. My wife had dreamed of going to the Far East, and I, for some reason, wanted to go to the Middle East. And anyway, the General Conference settled it when they asked us, the first question was, how much do you owe? And we said, $30,000. And they said, well, we don't send anyone into mission service that owes more than $15,000. Times have changed, haven't they? But so that closed the door there, and we began thinking about a mission field in our home conference of Arkansas, Louisiana. My wife was from New Orleans, and I had grown up in Gentry, as I mentioned. So we prayed about it, and actually I had gone back on a scouting trip before graduation, and the Lord had led us, interestingly enough, to a dark county that was entitled Clark County. And maybe the Lord has a sense of humor, but anyway, and we felt the doors were opening there. So we moved in January, actually. Just, I need to abbreviate things here, this could take all night. So I graduated in December, and a few days before graduation, I had gone back and taken the regional board. Came back, we had a house to sell, we had a baby due, and she came on January 2, and we were able to sell the house within a week or so, and packed everything up and moved to Arkansas by the end of January. And then we bought a lot and built an office. I worked with the contractor, and by August 1st, we had a nice little 1,300 square foot office ready to begin practice. So that's how we began our work there. We really wanted to use the health message as the entering wedge to help break down prejudice and win souls. But it was a real struggle because there were very few Adventists that worked with us. We had another family actually moved from Loma Linda. And back then, the Campus Hill Church had a program called the Three Amen. And that stood for the Three Angels' Messages Everywhere Now. And they had an interesting training program where they taught us natural remedies and how to give Bible studies and various things. Probably not quite as thorough as some of the Amazing Facts training programs that we have today, but it gave us some tools to work with. And we began a health education center in Arkadelphia, which was 25 miles away from where my practice was, the county seat. And we rented a storefront and right on the main street of town and put in a bakery and a little vegetarian lunch counter, and there was a classroom where we would conduct stop smoking programs and nutrition classes, weight control classes, and things like that. And we identified the two vegetarians in the town of about 11,000, and but it was a good learning experience for us, and we really were blessed by the about 3 years we operated that in our spare time while I was starting the practice. But anyway, about 3 years later, the physicians that were working for us felt that this ministry should be making some money. And we saw it as a ministry. They were putting in the money and we were putting in the time. And so when they pulled away their money, we couldn't continue. We had to close it. Anyway, during that time also, we were starting a church, and we had the church built up to about 50 members, which was a real blessing. And then we felt we needed to be working more to witness to the people in our own community. And so we began a company in our home that later grew into a church as well. And then there's a statement that we found. It just seems like things weren't developing as fast as we wanted. And so with the church, we read this statement from Counsels to Teachers, page 176. It says, when properly conducted, church schools will be the means of lifting the standard of truth in the places where they are established. For children who are receiving a Christian education will be witnesses for Christ. As Jesus in the temple solved mysteries which priests and rulers had not discerned, so in the closing work of this earth, children who have been rightly educated will in their simplicity speak words which will be an astonishment to men who now talk of higher education. And so we thought, well, maybe this would help us establish a stronger work here in Amity and surrounding areas. And so about that time also, we read the book Madison, God's Beautiful Farm. How many of you have read that book? I see a few hands. It's a book that you need to read. It's a beautiful history of and a biography of Dr. Edward Sutherland and how the Lord used him not only in raising up the work at Madison, the Madison College work, but also his work at Walla Walla College in establishing, actually founding that school. And he worked actually a year or two at Union College and also at Emmanuel Missionary College in Andrews. But we read that book and it inspired us to start a school. And of course, we dreamed of a college program in our union, a college like Madison College. But there weren't any resources and we had few people working with us. So we thought, well, maybe the Lord would open the way for us to start an academy. Actually, our oldest child was academy age, and she had gone to Oklahoma Academy in its early days. And we saw the influence that school had had in the lives of many young people. And we were impressed that, well, maybe we could start with an academy. So we laid it before the Lord, and we said, Lord, if this is what you want us to do, we need a teacher. One other teacher, my wife was a certified teacher, but we need another teacher and we need some students. And within a few days, we learned of a Weimar graduate in secondary education who had just married a young lady and they were living about 40 miles away looking for work. And we thought, well, maybe that's the Lord's answer. And then a couple of people came to us asking us if we would teach their kids the ninth grade. So here within just a few days, we had a second teacher and four students. So we started in our home that year, and the next year we had eight students, and the next year we had 17 students, and following year was 23, and by this time our house was actually, we had several mobile homes as well, but we were feeding everybody in our house, and it was about 35 people three times a day, and it was quite an experience. We could tell lots of interesting stories about that time. Actually, my son can tell some really interesting stories too, so sometimes sometime you may want to ask him to share some of those experiences. But I've digressed from my chapter here in 1 Corinthians. Okay, Paul says in verse 8, "Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we are laborers together with God, ye are God's husbandry, ye are God's building. According to the grace of God, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereon." So Paul is saying that one person might lay a foundation and somebody else might build on it. And we've had the privilege of laying some foundations and also building on it. But and with the situation in the world today, we trust that we will be able to continue until the Lord comes. But nevertheless, and then verse 11 says, "For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ." Well, like we said, the foundation was laid for Washita Hills Academy, and we've been amazed to see how God has used that. Now, I've had a number of people who read literature in my office and asked for Bible studies or wanted to know more actually gave their hearts to Jesus and joined His remnant church, and that's a thrilling thing. But, you know, we've always wanted to see more and more of that. And one of the programs we started early on, I think the second year of the school, we started a Colporter program where the students would go out and sell the MAGA books. And that was such a win-win situation for the students, learning communication skills, sharing the truth of God with others, and actually bringing in some income as well that supported the school. So, and we had a number of baptisms that resulted from the books that were left in homes. And that is always a thrill, not only for us, but for young people that are involved in that as well. In 93, I think it was, the school started in 88, about 93, we had been looking for property, and the Lord led us to some property 4 miles outside of town, and we were able to purchase this property, actually the Lehman Foundation that owns most of the self-supporting schools in southern states provided the means to do that with, and so it's actually owned by the Lehman Foundation, which is the outgrowth of the Madison program. Even though Madison College was closed in 1962, the Lehman Foundation was started by one of the founders of Madison College, Lyda Scott, left $1 million in her estate to establish and strengthen self-supporting schools in the South, and that was 1926. So there's been a lot of, that was a lot of money back in 1926, wasn't it? But anyway, so we're thankful that we can be part of that self-supporting heritage. But then it was 1993, we were able to purchase 381 acres with all of the criteria we felt that met God's criteria for a school. It had a little river flowing through it that would support agriculture, and it was rather remote. You have to really go there intentionally. Nobody just stumbles on Washita Hills Academy and college, but it's a beautiful and peaceful place, and sorry I don't have any pictures to show you tonight. But then in 2003, our dream of starting a college was realized. And this year, our college program has, for the first year, that we have more college students than we have academy students. And we have 49 in the college and 35 in the academy. And it's just been really thrilling. What has supported the college is, again, literature ministry. And I think you all have had Eugene Pruitt speak to you, haven't you? Most of you perhaps are familiar with Eugene Pruitt, and he has been tremendously used of the Lord in inspiring young people with the potential for the literature ministry. And so most of our college students are able to actually work their way through college, pay for all of their college expenses through the literature ministry, and that has been a tremendous tremendous blessing. I need to close here, but let me just finish this chapter with another thought or two. In verse 13, every man's work shall be manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide, in verse 16, know ye not that ye are the temple of God, and that the Spirit of God dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of God, him shall God destroy, for the temple of God is holy, which temple ye are. And and he goes on to say, the Lord knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Therefore, let no man glory in men. And so tonight I want to share with you that we haven't done anything, you know, to take credit. It's been God's work in starting churches and the schools. And we just want to be tools in his hand. And many of you are developing the temples, your temples, in the minds that you're developing and the skills that you're learning in medicine and dentistry. And I just challenge you to remember that we have a responsibility for developing the temples of our families and those around us as well. And we want to be tools and instruments in God's hand in sharing and preparing others for eternity, because life is too short to do anything otherwise. And at best, even if we live 70 or 80 or 90 years or more here, it's just a drop in the bucket to what God has planned for us. And so I would encourage you to allow the Lord to lead and direct you. Some of you may be planters, and some of you may be waterers. And whatever it is God calls you to do, it is my prayer that you will find joy and satisfaction in serving him in these last days of Earth's history. Thank you.